Hello, I'm Carrie.
And I'm Emily.
And we are the voices of Tarbis.
And what is Tarbis, we hear you cry?
Well, Tarbis is a blog that we set up about a year ago.
Yep.
To blog about historical places that we'd been to, giving them ratings and advising people to go there, really.
And eat, because Tarbis stands for Time and Relative Blogging, including sandwiches.
Indeed. So we decided that we would expand a little bit on that and bring you some facts and figures about places, people, events, dynasties, things like that throughout the past as a podcast.
Yeah, and because we wanted to use different forms of media to geek out over history because it's what we like to do best.
It is indeed, and we hope you enjoy listening to it. And if you want to get in touch, give us a review, suggest some things or people that you'd like us to talk about, here's how you can do it.
On Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and WordPress. I'm saying them all because we all have one name. We are at Tarbis in capitals history.
Indeed, and we would love to hear from you. So without further ado, here's Tarbis
After Hours.
This week on Tarbis After Hours, we're delving into another part of the globe that we've yet to explore. We're going over to South America, to Peru to be exact, home of Paddington Bear. Let's go there.
That rhymed.
Yeah, I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
I did not.
I did know it. The man we're going to talk about is probably the most famous Incan emperor and is regarded as the greatest. Pachacuti.
Now, we can't shy away from the fact that most of the younger generation who like history will know of Pachacuti from Horrible Histories. And we have mentioned a couple of times, maybe, how we are slight geeks when it comes to that show. But we are determined to not sing the Pachacuti song for the entirety of this podcast. But we shall see.
Considering when we decided to do it, we immediately sang the Pachacuti song. I'm not holding out much hope.
Let's see what we can do.
Okay. Pachacuti Inca Yupanqui. Also spelt with a C as in Pachacutec, because, I mean, why not? Was born in 1391 in Cusco, Peru.
Is it just me when you say Cusco, I just think of Emperor's New Groove from Disney?
Yep. Emperor and you've Cusco. Now thrown me off my groove.
Sorry. Continue.
His first name roughly translates into He Who Overturns Space and Time, though more commonly translated as Earthshaker. And his surname, Yupanqui, means with honour. So he's shaking the earth with honour. Because, you know, it's the best way to shake the earth, if I'm honest.
Isn't it just?
Pachacuti has been likened to Philip II of Macedonia. And similarly, his son, Topa Inca Yupanqui, is regarded... What was that noise?
It was your computer.
That's awkward. I do apologise. Let's continue. his son has been regarded as a counterpart to Philip's son. You may have heard of him, Alexander the Great.
I've heard a little bit of him. Yeah. I think I know of him.
Possibly, just a little bit. His father was called Viracocha Inca, and his mum was Mama Runtakaya.
Well done!
Thank you. He had three brothers from that marriage called Inca Roca, Tupac Yupanqui, and Capac Yupanqui. Disclaimer, we're probably not doing well with the names here. We do apologise.
We should just have this disclaimer in the beginning of our podcasts.
It's Tarbis. Welcome to Tarbis After Hours. Disclaimer, we don't know what we're saying.
But we do not offend.
Yes, we mean no offence. Right. He had these brothers, but as the Middle Ages will tell us, no one kept it in their pants.
No, they did not.
He had two other brothers, Inca Urco and Inca Soxo, whose mother was called Kukuri Chopa. His wife's name was Mama Anaharaqui, I think. Possibly. Or Kaya Anawaki. He had three sons, Tupac Ayamanco, Apu Paca, and Tupac Inca Yupanqui. Why do you always give me the difficult words?
Because we've heard how I sound trying to pronounce, well, practically anything ever. It's embarrassing, and probably I probably unintentionally insult people.
I'm pretty sure I'm doing a good enough job of it tonight.
And this is only the first little bit, Carrie.
Yep. The Incan language, which we are murdering, is called Quechua, or more properly, runasimi, meaning literally people mouth. It's what's called an agglutinative language, which means they add syllables onto a root to form long, meaningful words. Kind of like the Germans do. By the addition of these small words into the Quechua verbs, you can use it to express subtleties of thought and emotion. So you've got many words with several synonyms, each having a slight twist of meaning depending on what you put on the end. Runasimi contains many onomatopoeic words, so words that make a sound. Although outlawed for a period by the Spaniards after the result of the revolt, of Tupac Amaru II, Quechua has survived and has about 10 million speakers today.
It's so cool that they still speak that language.
It's fantastic. I think things like that are amazing, that people do speak the dead languages.
Mm-hmm.
It's described by native speakers as a very extraordinarily expressive language. It would be if we learned how to speak it.
It would be very cool, but there's no way. I mean, I struggled with German, and I did that for 5 years.
To be fair, I'm learning a couple of different languages, or trying to learn a couple of different languages at the moment. I can't really add one more to my list, so maybe in about 10 years' time, I'll learn it.
You got to finish Dothraki.
I've got to finish Dothraki, and I've got to finish Chinese, and quite frankly, I'm not entirely sure which is harder.
So anyways, looks like tangent there. Back to the man himself. Pachacuti's given name was actually Kusi Yekankwi, and he was not supposed to succeed his father. His father had appointed his brother Yuso as the crown prince. However, in the midst of an invasion of Cusco by the Chancas?
Yeah.
The Incans' traditional tribal arch enemies. So it's mm-hmm. like, you know, they're the bad guys. In their eyes. Pachacuti had a real opportunity to demonstrate... How many times is your computer going to beep, Carrie?
I've turned the sound off. I apologise.
Right. So, Pachacuti had a real opportunity here to demonstrate his talent. While his father and brother... So while they were fighting the Chancas, mm-hmm. his father and brother fled the scene.
Oh.
But Pachacuti rallied the army and prepared for a desperate defence of his homeland. In the resulting battle, the Chancas were defeated so severely that legend tells even the stones rose up to fight on Pachacuti's side. That is a fib that he told.
Yeah.
Because basically the Chancas ran away over a hill and they were slaughtered. But Pachacuti wanted to make it seem even bigger. So he was like, oh people, listen, gods has shone down upon the Incas. The stones turned into Incan warriors to fight on our side. So yeah, that is what, and which meant that any subsequent fight after that, warriors used to, certain warriors, don't know why they would want to do this, adding some, you know, weight to their marching, would carry like 4 sticks with some cloth in the middle,
mm-hmm.
full of stones. Just to be like, oh yeah, if you annoy us, these stones are going to turn into more of us.
To be fair, I mean, they would have spent the majority of their lives training to be warriors, so they're pretty hench, so it wouldn't be that much of a burden.
Yeah, but imagine if you go to fight. Nope, you today, my son, are going to carry some stones.
I suppose they thought of it as an honour?
Possibly.
Yeah.
But that was why he took the name of the Earth Shaker,
mm-hmm.
because the earth shook and turned stone to men. He won the support of the people and the recognition of his father, and he was then crowned as the crown prince after the death of his brother. In thanks for this divine help, the leader set up stone warriors as sacred shrines around the city.
And they're called Pururocas.
I mean, that's a cool word.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in thanks to Pachacuti, they put a load of stone soldiers around the city. Yeah. And Pachacuti was the first Incan ruler to have ambitions that were beyond Cusco. Sorry. He conquered territories in the Cusco Valley mm-hmm. and beyond, thus beginning the Incan Empire, which would grow and last until the Spanish conquest in 1532 AD. But more on that later.
BC. Oh no, AD. No, you're right. Sorry, I see CE and I get confused. My bad. I do apologise. I was wrong.
And I have it on record! Oh my god! Oh, I'm going to listen back to this all the time.
Please continue.
Okay, so immediately he initiated an energetic series of military campaign which would transform the small state around Cusco into a formidable nation. This event says Brundage.
Brundage is a historian.
Yeah. He said that it is presented to us in the sources as the most striking event in all of Incan history. The year one, as it were.
Okay.
So even though, obviously, Incans were around before Pachacuti,
mm-hmm.
they believe that it started properly with Pachacuti, it created an empire.
So this was like the first unified Inca.
Yeah. His conquests were, as in Pachacuti's conquests, were in collaboration with Tupac, Yupanqui, which was his son and his successor. And they were so successful that the Ninth Incan Empire is sometimes referred to as Napoleon of the Andes.
Fair enough.
Mm.
Pachacuti also reorganised his new empire. The Tahuantinsuyu, or the United Four Provinces, was what he organised it into.
I'm very proud of you. That was amazing.
Thank you. I was closing my eyes and praying all the way through. under his system, you had four apos, which each controlled one of four provinces, called a suyu. Below these governors were the tokrikok, or the local leaders, who ran a city, valley, or mine. And then by the time the Spanish conquest of Peru happened, each apo had around 15 tokrikoks below him. But we can probably assume there were fewer when Pachacuti first organised his system. So that was like at the end of things.
Yeah.
He also established a separate chain of command for the army and priesthood and established a system of checks and balances on power. So he wanted to promote power but keep it in check. He dispatched spies to regions where he wanted to add to his empire, and their job was to send back intelligence reports on political organisations, military might and wealth. He then communicated with the leaders of these lands, extolling the benefits of joining his empire. He'd offer them presents of luxury goods, such as high-quality textiles, and a promise that they would be materially richer as subject rulers of the Inca. Most accepted his rule as a fait accompli, which means a done deal, and acquiesced peacefully. They gave in, and military conquest was not necessary. There is some similarity with how Roman emperors thought people should welcome their rule as bringing benefits, good government, and the Pax Romana, so the Roman people. The ruler's children would then be brought to Cusco to be taught about the Inca administration systems before then returning to rule their own native lands. And this allowed the Inca to indoctrinate the former ruler's children into the Inca nobility and, with luck, marry their daughters into families at various corners of the empire. So you're building an empire on knowledge and like an indoctrination into that culture and through marriage as well. So he's strengthening the links on a couple of levels.
Which is similarly to what they were doing in England and what they have done.
Well, basically, if you look back through any good empire or ruling system in history, they will try and strengthen through marriage and through learning and through the creation of wards by people sending their children to whoever's conquered them. Kind of, it's half reward by getting these children educated in this new system, also half threat by saying, we have your children, behave.
Oh.
Yeah.
Deep, man.
Deep.
Many of the most renowned monuments around Cusco, such as the Great Sun Temple of Cuicancha. I was getting there.
You're close, yeah.
Were rebuilt during Pachacuti's reign. Moving south to east, Pachacuti would then conquer the basin of Lake Titicaca, including the cultures of Kola and Lapacua.
Correct, well done.
Mm-hmm. Pachacuti then retired to Cusco, while his brothers and son, Tupac Inca Yupanqui, who he may have co-ruled with at some point, like we've said, that he conquered some lands with his son, were given the task of continuing the conquest of the Andes. So basically, he did all the groundwork, and then he was like, I'm going to chill back here a bit, but I'm going to put the people I trust, my son and my brothers, to go out and conquer the other places for me.
Makes sense, because he would have wanted to consolidate his rule at home. Because if you're away so long, the people at home are going to forget about you, and someone else will try and take your place.
Yeah. And some of the first incursions of this were south into Ecuador and Chimru.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
Even Alexa doesn't know.
you murdered civilization so much. Even Alexa didn't get it.
You know when you just have you trying to say a word and your head is just like, nope.
Yeah.
And with the words civilization.
Kind of woo. I haven't even had a drink.
This is why I don't have the big words. I can't even say civilization.
There you go. You've got it now. So
I'm not going to say it anymore. But concentrating on government, Patrick Hutey is credited with introducing the various apparatus of state, which would ensure the Incas could continue their regional domination long term.
Okay.
So not only did he begin the empire, he thought beyond him, beyond his son.
Yeah.
He thought long term. But moving out on that kind of branch of a tree,
mm-hmm.
Is how Pachacuti Hutey governed Cusco. So as the Incan ruler introduced systems of tribute and taxation, which were paid by conquered peoples either in form of goods or labour.
Okay.
These made the Incas unpopular, but they were used productively to create an extensive road network which linked towns and sacred sites.
Okay.
So they're now starting to actually link their conquered places together.
Yeah, and it's giving back as well. So these people are sending in these tributes, and instead of keeping the tributes, they're putting them to some use so people can get the benefit of them.
Yeah. A system of storage houses were also built and dotted around the empire to ensure plentiful food supply, even in times of low agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So in an effort to simplify royal succession... Really struggling to life today. Pachacuti Hutey instigated the system of a ruler nominating his principal wife, from whom heirs to the throne would be drawn.
Okay.
Pachacuti Hutey had historians record the important episodes of Incan history on painted tablets, which were then stored for posterity in a building at the capital, where no one without authorization may enter.
So basically a form of record private
keeping.
Library.
Yeah. Private library and record keeping for future.
Hmm, handy.
Yeah. With his conquests and income made more secure, Pachacuti Hutey, perhaps following an inspirational visit to monumental...
Tiwanaku.
Yeah. Then set out...
Aggrandizing?
Oh, Karen. Yeah, his capital, and replacing its many earthen structures with impressively crafted stonework. So he then went back to Cusco to make everything that little bit more him and just make it more special, make it... Because he wanted it to be the centre of the Incan Empire. So it'd be the capital city, like London sort of thing.
Okay. Didn't he also... He changed the calendar as well to get in market days and public holidays.
He did.
So he's done quite a lot of good, you know. He's consolidated his empire and done quite a lot of good and lasting good as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Take a few minutes to have a breath. It's my
I need to have a drink. I don't even know what's wrong with me. do apologize. Please don't turn off.
Right. At this point, he drained the northern area of Cusco and built a new ceremonial centre there and built himself a palace known as Cunta Cancha. He also rebuilt the Temple of Inti in the Coricancha complex and started construction of a fortress-like Sacsayhuaman, which would protect the northern approach to Cusco. Pachacuti Hutey built city temple fortress sites at other strategically important locations, such as Puzac and Ollantaytambo, and at either end of the Urubamba Valley, and many way stations and outposts of the empire, such as Tambo, Colorado, on the coast. So he's building all these monuments and all these places for people to go, these way stations, everything, to connect the empire.
He's also supposed to be building them at quite, like you said, important locations.
Yeah.
So, like, building that one on the coast, people are going to see it as they are approaching. They're going to know where they're coming.
But it also gives them a defensible position on the coast as well.
Yeah.
To prevent from sea invaders. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, the Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
We said before that Pachacuti is known to have built many of the monuments around Cusco, but none, I don't think, are more famous than Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu, meaning Old Hill, was built circa 1450.
Yeah, everyone's heard of Machu Picchu.
It is very much on my to-go list.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, half of this tar list is just my holiday shopping list. The purpose of Machu Picchu is not really agreed. So we're not 100% sure why he built it. Scholars have argued that it could be a fortress, an imperial retreat, a symbol of Incan power for the benefit of conquered locals, or a ceremonial precinct, or maybe a combination of all of the above. Perhaps the most likely role was the latter, so the ceremonial precinct, and most of the architecture was designed for religious purposes, and the site's fortifications may well have been put in place to ensure only a select few could enter the sacred site. So kind of like the Forbidden City in Japan.
Oh, right, yeah.
In further support of this interpretation, a road was discovered which linked the site to several residential settlements dotted along the valley. So they had record of people living there as well. The town had a capacity for about 1,000 residents at its peak and ranked amongst the most sacred of all sites of the Inca. On the ruler's death, the ownership of the site passed to Pachacuti's family successors. The site was abandoned by the Inca shortly before Pizarro and the Spanish conquistadors arrived in South America, who never stumbled across it.
Could you imagine if they had?
I'm not entirely sure there'd be much left. I mean,
exactly.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Spanish culture. I think they're very culture. But what they did to the Incas and the Aztecs, no, that's not okay. And the Mayans as well, like the lesser known cousin. Yeah, it's not okay.
No. But going back slightly to his how Pachacuti, he managed to do this whole empire, and he wasn't even meant to be ruler.
Yeah.
He wasn't even meant to. He had kind of like a few fear tactics. One of them was, like I said before, where the army started to carry in platforms of stones into battle.
Yeah, the whole...
The sacred stones, saying that each stone is the spirit of a great warrior. You piss us off and we will become men from stone.
The ground will come to life.
The ground... Karen, we've managed to get through.
I didn't sing it.
All right, but yeah, basically they'd put loads of stones on the floor and say that they would rise to be warriors.
Yeah.
Also, he would take the leaders or the chiefs of other rival tribes.
Okay.
And he would stuff their skins with straw and ash.
I'm assuming he killed them first.
Yeah.
Okay, that was nice of
him. Yeah, that was great. And you would make them into like scarecrows. And the corpses were taken to specific burial grounds and were seated on stone benches. And then their stuffed arms were bent in such a way that when it was windy, they would like...
Fight the urge. Don't sing it, come on.
They would... Like, the wind would move their... hands and their fingers against the skin of their belly, and it would be like a drum, so everyone would be able to hear. So his message was clear, like, your rival chief, you say no, this could be you.
Yeah, this could be you, and you're going to stand there and play like a funeral drum for all your people that are buried here.
Definitely. Talking of songs, you know you said how Try Not to Sing and the Pachacuti song from Hobo Histories that we know and love.
Which has been incredibly difficult.
It has. I think we've done quite well so far.
So far.
We're halfway through. We can do this. It's actually based on truth. The Incan warriors would go into battle singing war songs.
Okay.
And
makes sense.
The song, even though the one for Hobo Histories has been slightly changed obviously to fit with the tune, the words are not that dissimilar.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to speak the words of their war song. We'll drink chica from your skull. From your teeth we'll make a necklace, from your bones we'll make our flutes, and from your skin we'll make a drum. So they would go into their battles singing that song.
I mean, it's a lot less perky than the Horrible Histories one.
Somewhat.
Admittedly, it would be quite intimidating if you have a load of people just chanting this at you.
That we're going to make your skin a drum.
Yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna pull out your teeth and wear them as necklaces. You'd probably think twice. You'd be like, guys, should we do this? I mean, are we all feeling this? Because honestly, I could go home. I think I've left the oven on.
Yeah, so next time you sing the Horrible History song, you're actually singing an ancient Incan war song.
Just don't sacrifice a llama beforehand.
Now, Patrick Hutey, to him. There's not that much more to learn about his timeline.
Okay.
He died in 1471.
Oh.
And all we know is that he died of a terminal illness.
So obviously, something quite normal.
Yep. Well. Obviously, they didn't have, like, specific doctors writing down that it may have been measles, because there was quite a big plague, which was either measles or smallpox, that was brought over by Spaniards. But they don't actually know.
I should just say, I'm booing the smallpox, not the Spaniards.
Wow.
We're going to Spain in a couple of months. Love Spain. Hate smallpox.
Yeah.
Continue. Sorry.
Yes. So, he died of a terminal illness.
Yeah.
Which is actually, like you said, it is quite normal. When you think of if you think of other kings and other massive emperors that have had big impacts on their culture, you think died like in battle or murder or assassination.
Or exploding from eating too much lamprey.
Exactly. Nope, he died of a terminal illness. And feeling that he was actually at the point of death, he sent for his sons, who were then in different parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
In their presence, he first divided all of his jewels and the contents of his wardrobe between mm-hmm. them. Next, he made them plough furrows so that they were vassals of their brother mm-hmm. and that they had to eat by the sweat of their hands. So he gave them a load of jewels, he gave them a load of clothes. He then made them go out, get their own food and eat it with him.
So they had to work, they had to serve each other
mm-hmm.
by working together and actually manually ploughing the land. So yep. he was teaching them what his people did.
Yep. Then they all sat and they ate a meal together.
Mm-hmm.
He then also gave them like weapons and that they were to fight for their brother or their dad.
Mm-hmm.
So he then gave them weapons and said, now when you go on, you must fight for me. Mm-hmm. And then he dismissed them. He then sent for the Incas Oro Jones of Cusco, his relations, and for Tupac, his son. And apparently he said to his son, "Son, you now see how many great nations I leave to you, and you know what labour they have cost me. Mind that you are the man to keep and argument them. No one must raise his two eyes against you and live, even if he be your own brother. I leave you these, our relations, that they may be your counsellors. Care for them, and they shall serve you. When I am dead, take care of my body and put it in the houses of Patalacata. Have my golden image in the house of the sun and make my subjects in all of the provinces offer up solemn sacrifice, after which keep the festival of Puracaya and I may go to rest with my father the sun."
Okay.
He actually said that.
That's quite cool.
It is, isn't it? And after he finished that speech, so he'd said to his son, he knew that he was dying, he'd said basically, "I'm leaving you all of this, I'm going, look what I'm leaving you, anybody who tries to take up arms against you, destroy them."
Yeah.
Kill them.
If they raise their two eyes, so if they look at you levelly and angrily,
mm-hmm.
cut them down.
Yep, it's like, "I'm leaving you this family to be your relations, to be your counsellors, but kill them too if they look at you that way."
Yeah, it's like, rely on your family, but be aware that family can turn against you.
Yeah, and then
sound advice.
Mm-hmm. And they say that after he finished that speech, he began to sing in a low and sad voice, and obviously in his native language, mm-hmm. which we haven't done great with so far.
Mm-hmm.
We've translated it into English.
Okay.
So this, he sung, "I was born as a flower of the field. As a flower, I was cherished in my youth. I come to my full age. I grow old. Now I am withered and die." And then he died.
It's quite sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Sad, but like bittersweet.
Isn't it? I think it's actually quite nice.
And it actually seems like he knew what was coming and he was ready for it. Saying like, he lived a long life. I've lived a long life. I'm now ready to go. It's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. According to his wishes, the Incans mourned for one whole year.
One whole year of mourning. I mean, I would, because I'm loving Patrick Hutey.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, on a scale of George IV mourning for maybe a day before he became king, to Victoria, that's pretty low down the scale. You know, a year is fine.
Yeah,
fine. They then held a month-long celebration of the great leader, during which his personal items were paraded around the corners of the empire. A mock battle was staged at Cuzco, and personally I think these poor souls got the raw end of the deal here. 2,000 llamas were sacrificed. Yeah, I mean, we sacrificed a goat. We sacrificed goats and dogs for Lucalia, now it's llamas and Inca. I mean, animals get a rough end.
Mm-hmm. Keep reading.
A thousand more llamas were sacrificed around the empire, and so too children were sacrificed in all the places the ruler had visited in his lifetime. So llamas weren't enough, godfers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Pachacuti was then mummified, and he may have been buried in a shrine known as Patalacta at Kenko, not to be confused with the coffee, on the heights above Cuzco. Even after his death, the ruler continued to be venerated, and his mummy, or Malki, along with other past rulers, was regularly given outings into the outside world, where it was ritually fed, and even, on occasion, consulted in times of political strife. So even after his death, mummification and desiccation, and then basically rot, he was still consulted and fed.
And paraded round the towns.
Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, keeping it alive. In addition, the Inca's hair and fingernails were incorporated into a sacred statue of him, and Pachacuti's large stone hunting lodge at Tambo Macay, just above Cuzco, was made into a sacred site, or huaca. In the official Inca state archives, such were his stature and achievements that almost all significant developments in statecraft and empire were credited to Pachacuti, whether he did them or not.
Yeah.
Tupac Inca Yupanqui, his son, took over as Sapa Inca, which means ruling Inca, and continued his father's imperial plans, eventually doubling the size of the empire. In 1559, the Spanish discovered Pachacuti's mummy, which had been secretly hidden by the Incas following the conquest. It was sent to Lima by Juan Pablo de Ondragado, but was lost in transit, or perhaps simply destroyed, like so many other symbols of Incan culture.
Yep.
That hurts. That actually hurts on quite a few levels.
So, his mummy, his body is gone.
Yeah, his body's gone.
Yep. But despite his political and military talents, Pachacuti did not improve the system of succession. Probably because he didn't think he needed to. His son became the next Incan lord without any known dispute after Pachacuti died in 1471. But for future generations, the next Inca had to gain control of the empire by winning enough support from the Apos, priesthood, and military to win a civil war or intimidate anyone else from trying to wrest the control of the empire. So Pachacuti's son then decided it wouldn't go down in succession just because your dad
mm-hmm.
was, that like, it would be the next born, like it has been up until Princess Charlotte was born. It would always be the firstborn son. But it then stopped, and you then had to prove yourself. You had
just
to have...
FYI, for anyone listening outside of the country, Princess Charlotte is the youngest daughter of Prince William and Princess Catherine.
Oh,
who
yeah.
are, like, the... Like, he's the future king, isn't he?
Yeah.
After Charles. Currently in England. Sorry.
So, yeah, my bad. I forget that not everybody knows who she is.
That's true.
they had to basically win support.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be able to have the backing of other people to then become the next lord. Pachacuti is credited with inventing the bureaucratic structure of the Incan state,
mm-hmm.
Codifying Incan law, reorganising and codifying Incan religion, and developing the institution called the Panca, which provides household for the royal mummies. He transformed the Incas from a predatory chiefdom into a highly centralised and stratified state. He administrated a economy through a monopoly of force and codified law. Not a bad legacy to leave there, is it?
Not really, no. It's quite a sound one as well.
It is. Everything that he did, he
yeah.
did all of that,
and
as well as conquering an empire.
And it lasted for another, 150, nearly 200 years?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, on top of that, though?
I do not know.
Good old Patchy was actually a poet and an author.
Nice.
He wrote some of the most famous Incan poems. He didn't write the poets, he wrote the poems. The sacred hymns, or Hailikuna, of the Situa ceremony, including the song on his deathbed that you said earlier.
Oh, he wrote that?
Yeah, he wrote that. English translations can be found in Ancient American Poets by John Curl, published in 2005, together with a detailed biography and a survey of Incan poetic traditions, if you're interested.
Yeah.
Traditions of poetry and song were deeply engraved in Incan culture, encompassing both sacred and secular forms shared by the common people and the aristocracy. Prayer songs, ceremonial songs, work songs and love songs were all part of the texture of daily life. Poetry, music and dance were integral to all the great Inca religious festivals. Each region throughout the empire retained its language and culture and cultivated its own fine arts, as well as taking on the superimposed Quechua and Incan culture. On special occasions, theatrical dramas were performed with interludes of poetry and music. Only one complete ancient Inca drama has come down to us, however, the great Apu Olonte, in which Pachacutec is a major character.
Ah!
Jailis, or sacred hymns, were prayers and philosophical ponderings. Incan priests greeted each sunrise and sunset singing Jailis, usually accompanied by music, beseeching Tishi Wiracocha, the creator, Inti, the sun, Ilapa, the thunder and lightning, Pachamama, the earth mama, Pacha,
earth,
there you go, Mamaquila, the moon, and all the huacas, or spirits of places, to grant health, prosperity and happiness for all the people, the Inca and the empire. Sacred hymns were usually composed by poets who were also priests.
So Pachacuti wrote a lot of the things that they were used that were ingrained into Incan culture.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Again, legacy.
Yep, the sacred Yali was considered the highest poetic form, but there were other Yalis as well. They encompassed historical and agricultural modes and themes. Heroic hymns celebrated the military exploits of the Incan kings and warriors. Unfortunately, no heroic Yalis have survived, but we have a number of anonymous agricultural hymns. These Yalis were sung by the working people during sowing and harvesting, particularly during collective work in the fields of the sun and of the Inca, the fields that not only supported the religious establishments and the governing autocracy. Say it for me, my brain just stopped saying it.
Autocracy?
Thank you very much. But also formed the common stores, which were distributed to the people in years of poor harvest. So he basically, I'm guessing, is how I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of religions say prayers before doing certain things.
Yeah.
This is the Incan version. They sing songs.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I mean, that's why we have hymns and everything now in, like, the Christian and Catholic religion. It's another way of praise. It's another way of prayer
mm-hmm.
that the common people can join in with.
Yeah. Quechua poets liked their verses brief and without obvious artifice. They didn't care about metrics. They didn't care about technical rigidity. The meters of their verses were determined by the inner necessities of meaning and the poetics of it.
So basically, they had different meters depending on what it meant.
Yeah, but there wasn't really any rules. Inside the forms of the songs, there was great flexibility, which is probably why Pachacuti was able to write so many, because mm-hmm. he could do kind of what he wanted. The rhythm was natural fluidity of the language, and the number of symbols in each line was highly mutable. A line of poetry usually consisted of only 5 or 6 syllables, and rarely more than 8. Okay. Rhyme was common but not necessary, and many Quechua words have the same endings, and blank verses were also common.
So basically just like humming or
mm-hmm.
sort of things.
I like the fact that Pachacuti was quite creative.
Quite artistic, that's nice. It's, mm-hmm. It gives them a more human aspect.
Yeah, definitely.
The hymns of Pachacuti were composed around 1440 to 1450, so towards the latter end of his life, and are among some of the world's greatest sacred poetry. So not only did he do it, he did it well.
He did.
He wrote 11 hymns, or Yalis in Quechua verse, which were sung to the accompaniment of instruments during the annual Inca ceremony of the Sitio Raymi, as mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceremony was held at the first new moon after the spring equinox. So that'll be fairly soon, actually.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah. Em did try to make me read a poem in Inca, but I thought it was a bit of a stretch to make you lovely listeners learn Inca, and apparently me too. So she kindly gave the English translations. We have all 11, but we're going to link to the website in the description, so we're not going to read all 11.
No.
But here is one. O Creator, root of all, Wiracocha, end of all. Lord in shining garments, who infuses life and sets all things in order, saying, let there be man, let there be woman. Moulder, maker, to all things you have given life, watch over them, keep them living prosperously, fortunately, in safety and peace. Where are you? Outside, inside, above this world in the clouds, below this world in the shades. Hear me, answer me, take my words to your heart, for ages without end, let me live. Grasp me in your arms, hold me in your hands. Receive this offering, wherever you are, my Lord, my Wiracocha.
Do you ever find it odd when you're listening to something written by someone so long ago and someone quite famous, like the historical figures, like they were his words? Patrick Cutty wrote those words.
It's a little bit insane. It's like when you listen to Green Seeds now, that was written around the time of Henry VIII.
You're bringing up one bay, as to about another bay.
I did listen to a piece of music that was supposedly from around 4,000 years ago.
Wow.
And it's weird to think that people who are long dead and dust wrote those words, mm-hmm. played that music, sang those songs. I mean, he wrote them, but thousands of his people would have then sang them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a prayer to honour the gods. So did we just, in a way, inadvertently honour the Incan gods?
I believe we did.
I mean, we have no llama to sacrifice, or small child, which probably would get social services on us, to be honest.
Not 100% sure it's okay to kill llamas, sacrifice llamas in this country.
No, I mean, we would face retribution from both social services, possibly the police and the RSPCA. So maybe just singing is the best way.
If you think of the Incas, just for a moment, how on earth are there any llamas left on this world?
They had a lot of farmers to farm the llamas.
A llama farmer.
They had a lot of llama farmers for specifically breeding them, I guess.
But they killed just 3,000 for Patrick Cutty.
But it's like, why llamas? Mm. What do llamas ever do to you? And why discriminate? Why not kill alpacas too?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I do not know.
No idea.
No. So, on that, just because Patrick Cutty and I have found a big love of Patrick Cutty for doing this. He is. I think all I know of him is what we've seen on Horrible Histories, and I'm not ashamed to say that. And yeah. They never really paint him in anything but a horrible light.
Yeah.
In a way, because they just show how he got this empire, because he did kill a lot of people and did do a lot of bad things. But look at all this amazing stuff.
Yeah.
He conquered it. He made an entire empire. He set it up so it could continue. He told his son what to do so he could make it even bigger. He set up a government. He set up all of this stuff.
If it hadn't been for the conquistadors, how long would that empire have continued? Would we still... Because bear in mind, this is like the 1400s. So we're talking in English. That's about the time of Richard II into Henry IV. So this is just after the Hundred Years' War, just before the War of the Roses. So, could you imagine how that would have gone on? Like, I mean, the conquistadors were around the time of Henry VIII and Elizabeth. So, would we have still known about them in the early modern period, so the Georgian era?
Don't know, it's crazy.
It's insane. But also, would we ever have had chocolate?
Hmm.
But we could have traded.
We could have.
Who knows?
Don't know.
In a parallel universe.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, yes. Do you have time for one more Patrick Cutty poem?
Just this one, and just for you. For your bae.
Thank you.
This is a prayer to the sun.
Hey.
So his dad. Not actually his dad.
You didn't see the waving of Carrie's jazz hands.
Yes, jazz hands, spirit fingers. Lord Wiracocha, who says, let there be day, let there be night. Who says, let there be dawn, let it grow light. Who makes the sun, your sun, move happy and blessed each day, so that man whom you have made has light. My Wiracocha, shine on your Inca people. Illuminate your servants whom you have shepherded. Let them live happy and blessed. Preserve them in peace, free of sickness, free of pain.
I like listening to Patrick Cutty poems.
You do? I'm glad.
And there's only 9 more left, which you can read to me later. I don't think our lovely people will want to listen to... you do another 9 Patrick Cutty poems.
No, I mean...
Unless you do, leave in the comments and we can record Carrie just reading to you.
Yes, maybe. Who knows?
And if we get more comments, I may even make her learn them in Incan.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, but for you, dear listeners, I would be willing to try that. I'd be willing to give it a go, just as long as you don't judge me when I inevitably murder it.
Fabulous.
So, we are at that time now, mm-hmm. where we're coming up to the end of the show.
We are.
And there's a very special segment that we like to do.
Ridiculous Death!
That was Emily's turn at Jazz Hands. Just before we do that, know that you can, if you're listening to us on one medium, you can also find us on Spotify.
You can.
Buzzsprout.
Yes.
Stitcher.
Yes.
And iTunes.
Yep.
Apple Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram.
At Tarvis History.
Twitter.
At Tarvis History.
And Facebook.
At Tarvis History.
So if you want to leave us a review, leave us a message, suggest a place or person or time or event mm-hmm. that we could go to next, just let us know how we're doing, or just say please never speak Incan again, we could do that.
Yep, and we also, obviously we started as a blog, mm-hmm. so we also have at Tarvis History on WordPress.
We do indeed. There is a blog update coming very soon. Unfortunately, recent events and bereavement have put that to one side slightly. But I will be, over the next couple of weeks, updating a little family trip to Ireland.
Yay!
That went on. So keep listening keep reading for that, and we'll let you know on the next podcast when that's up. Mm-hmm. So, Ridiculous Death.
Excited.
I couldn't really find one in the Incan area.
That's because Pachacuti's Bay.
Pachacuti's Bay. However, I have found one in sort of the same time.
All right.
Now, Charles II, your Charlie, is the man who was crowned thanks to the actions of Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. He is King of France. This one is... It's horrific how he died.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of horrific in a sort of way.
Well, we're laughing at someone's yeah. death. They're all not great.
This is true. Now, he had an illness. We're not quite sure what illness he had, but he decided that the best cure for it would be to wrap himself up in a blanket and douse himself in alcohol.
I mean, I wouldn't mind being wrapped in alcohol.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of a so-so figure. He was known as Charles the Bad. He fought England during the Hundred Years' War. He continually changed sides depending on how much he was being paid. Essentially, he was sort of a, if you like Game of Thrones, a little finger of the historic world.
Mm-hmm.
You love to hate him and you hate to love him, but you kind of like him a little bit.
Mm.
So when he got ill, his maid wrapped him, swaddled him completely in alcohol-soaked linen for relief. However, his maids probably weren't the brightest, because one of them one day noticed that there was a little stray thread coming off.
Oh, I hate them. Always get them with a lighter.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Did she think this...
So, this poor alcohol-soaked, swaddled king had a bit of an errant thread. She burnt it off with a candle, essentially turning him into a human Molotov cocktail. Poor King Charlie went up in smoke. Yeah, see what I mean? It's horrific, but at the same time you're like...
Oh my god! Did she not... Wow.
I mean, on the list of stupid things to do, yeah.
I can just imagine she was doing it and all the other maids were in slow motion like, no! As it just went,
I could imagine he was kind of like, no! At the same time as well, if I'm honest.
But he couldn't move because he was swaddled. Oh, mate.
The fact that he may have tried to get away and just poof. Literally like that.
Wow.
So,
shit me.
Apparently his enemies after his death used it as an example of divine will. That he was such a jerk and a bad person that this happened to him. But divine will or made stupidity, either way...
Yeah, it makes me shudder.
Yeah.
And that lovely note... yeah. Pachacuti is finished.
Pachacuti's finished and Charles II went up in smoke, so...
Yeah. We will speak to you next Tuesday.
Bye. Dude, Pachacuti.
We've almost did it.
We tried.
We're literally about to press stop.
Goodbye.